Fanning, weekends on 2FM.
Now, Framing Britney Spears, presented by the New York Times, premiered on this side of the world on Tuesday on Sky Documentaries, and it became the most watched programme in the channel's history. The film charts the rise, vilification and fall of Britney Spears during her career, and it turns the mirror firmly back on her father, Jamie, the US judicial system, the media and the public, and all of us. Samantha Stark is the director of Framing Britney Spears, and I spoke to her yesterday about the film, and I started by asking her whether the changing nature of the story means that we'll see a part two in the future.
I really hope so. There's so much more to the story that we could fit in, and you know, there's been a lot of interest in people reaching out to us, giving us tips after this has happened. So I'm very interested in doing that. We've started doing more work.
Okay, let's take a look at just like the two of the main points. The first main point is the conservatorship itself. What is that exactly? What does it mean?
So a conservatorship, it's called a guardianship in most other places, but yeah. a conservatorship is this unique legal arrangement where a person is deemed incapable of making basic decisions in their own best interest. And so the court assigns somebody else to make those decisions for them legally. It's most often used for elderly adults with dementia. So in Britney's case, it's very odd that a 26-year-old has this, and particularly odd that a 26-year-old who makes millions of dollars has this. It's a very, very restrictive. We know from court documents that Britney's conservators can control who comes to visit her. So who she interacts with, they can control who her healthcare. They can pick her doctors, they can access her medical records, and we think decide what parts of her medical records to share with her. They can also, we know they can sign business contracts for her, sign her checks. Britney doesn't sign her own checks or her own name on business contracts, and control everything about her money, how much money she spends, where the rest goes. Very restrictive.
Okay, well, I was just going to say, just on that note, that's one of the reasons why you don't get to talk to her in this film, even though I'm sure you would have liked to. But if you take a different one, like just this week, unfolding the story in Dubai, the United Arab Emirates, the ruler there, Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, and the hostage of the princess. And she got her notes out to say, you know, I am definitely a hostage. There's no question. And she was also arrested in international waters. And it's a really heavy situation. The UN has stepped in yesterday as well, saying we need an answer. So we see her talking on a phone saying, I am a prisoner. I am a hostage. It's the same for Britney. It's just that we can't see her telling us that. Isn't it?
It's so hard because we can't see her telling us anything. Like, because of the conservatorship, it enables this really tight circle around her and this cone of silence around her. You know, a lot of people are kind of making the assumption or argument. A lot of people are speculating that the reason Britney maybe agreed to go into this in the first place is that she wanted to see her kids. Something we forget about Britney is that she's a mother, and she was in the middle of a custody battle when this happened. And we know that she did get to start seeing her kids again just weeks after she entered the conservatorship. So a lot of people are making a point that perhaps this has gone on so long because Britney wanted to make sure she could see her kids. We don't know, but it also appears that could possibly be a reason why she's not speaking out about it. But we just don't know.
Okay, but even if her father, even if he has still got a certain charge over her, and even if the judge last week took some of that away, the whole thing moves so slowly. And with court records sealed and medical records sealed, etc., what's the legal rationale here? Why does the judge keep doubling down on this?
It's hard to say because all the records are sealed. So many of the records are sealed in this. So many of the records are healthcare records also that are sealed. But the rationale for the judge kind of doubling down, you know, in my understanding, maybe it appears that she is trying to follow like the letter of the law, but we as journalists can question how the law is written, how these institutions of power are run. And it really feels like there's not a clear path to dissolve a conservatorship once you're in one. They're really meant for the elderly who are going to die under them. They're meant a lot of times for people who are dying. So, for Britney as a young person to be put under this, and you know, we don't know how many other young people or people with disabilities are under this. A lot of the ACLU and Human Rights Watch recently have taken this up as a disability rights issue because it's so restrictive, and once you're in it, there's not a clear path to get out of it. So we don't know.
Okay.
What to do.
And what you do so brilliantly in this film is that you let recent history speak for itself. You don't try to tell us what's in her head. It's up to us to sort of guess certain things. So do you know, are there substance abuse issues? Is there mental illness? I mean, her dad wasn't on the scene.
Yeah, you know, we don't know. I think a lot of assumptions get made about Britney and then they get passed along as truth by different media outlets. We don't know if Britney even has a mental health diagnosis because all her records are sealed. That's something that a lot of people don't understand because it keeps getting reported. Oh, she has this, she has this. Maybe she has something, maybe she doesn't. The records are sealed about substance abuse. We don't know if she did or if she didn't. We do know her father went to rehab and her father had alcohol issues and her father is also was in charge of both her person and estate for 12 years and is now just still in charge of the estate. So it does appear to be a double standard in that way. I mean, the big question is, even though, does it matter what her diagnosis is or if she has substance abuse issues, should somebody capable of making millions of dollars in Las Vegas, jumping through fire, appearing on television, should they be deemed incapable of making their own basic decisions? That's the
reason. And also being seen on television in a full series of The X Factor, which she was as well. She was the judge on that, and she got $15 million for that. There's so much money with all of these things going around. How did increased and outrageous portrayals of her as a bad mother or being promiscuous play into her custody battle?
You know, I think one of the reasons we called this Framing Britney Spears is there are these still frames that so many people have seen of Britney. One of her shaving her head, one of her holding an umbrella to hit a paparazzi's car with. Is Britney a bad mom tripping and her, it looks like she could drop her baby. And those still frames, we wanted to pull outside of them and see what was outside them, what was the real story of what was happening. So it feels like when you see a still image that says Britney's meltdown, then you assume Britney was having a meltdown. But when you look outside and realize, you know, Britney was trying to see her kids and was getting turned away, and there were these men following her, asking her to talk about it. And her cousin said, please don't do this, please don't do this. And finally, Britney grabbed an umbrella and hit the guy's car with it and ran away. You know what I mean? So you assume this means she's having a breakdown, but when you actually pull back and look at it, like, was she?
Well, it's not so much that she definitely was not necessarily having a breakdown. She was trying to say, look, this is the new me. And the one you've been following all the time and paparazzing all the time, I'm not alive anymore. I'm gone. And it didn't work because people said, great, she's gone more crazy, more money for us. And that's the way it worked out. Just, the business of class comes into it without saying anything at all. She's this all-American girl, and yet many people want to be able to see her as white trash. You know, misogyny, class judgment there all the time. The Uggs, the sweatpants, the drive-ins, the coffee, the chips, the hair in a mess. All of these things play into something. And it annoys people that she was not poor when all this was happening. And this contributed to the sense of outrage, do you think, for a lot of people? How dare she?
Well, you know, I was able to go down to Kentwood, Louisiana, where Britney grew up. And it was really changed my perspective to physically be there and see it. It's an extremely rural area, you know, like a house in the middle of fields with dirt
Bible roads, belt.
Farms. Yeah. Bible Belt. It's a very, when you're there, it's a poor area. Poor people live there. There's not a lot of economic opportunity at all there. And that is where Britney and her family are from. And so when she, I've heard so many stories about her making money and wanting to give some of it away to help people and she got all these presents and she would give them to all her different family members and friends. And, she gets made fun of as white trash and then written off as someone who can't, who you should make fun of and is not a person to care about what you say about her. And so yes, class is definitely a part of it that we didn't really get into in the film.
Yeah, because it's there though, you can see it, because a lot of people would probably think that she went up the class ladder and now she's going back down of her own free will. So she must be crazy kind of stuff.
I think she just wanted to do things that reminded her of home.
Absolutely. Yeah. But do you think a man in her position would be deemed unfit to run his own life? I mean, even like take a look at something like Michael Jackson, crazier than anything we have ever seen of anybody, let alone with his own kids dangling them off, you know, hotel windows, etc., and like all the other stuff that's happened too. And if whatever he wants to do with his money, he's allowed to do it. Surely people have won the lotto. We've seen programs on TV about this sort of thing all the time. We've seen people go crazy with their money. And like, if she wants to take all her money and bring it out in the road and burn the whole thing, she should be allowed to do that.
You would think so. I mean, you know, you asked if it would happen to a man. As somebody on social media pointed out, you know, would, if this was a man, would his mom be put in charge of him for the rest of his life? And it sounds ridiculous when you hear it. And I think something just so disturbing about this is Brittany was kind of first came out as this ideal woman, like all American girl, picture of femininity, everyone's attracted to her. And then she gets treated like this and is in, you know, made to everyone think she can't make her own decisions. It just, the fact that she was put up as this ideal woman and this is how we treat an ideal woman bothers me.
Okay, just some of the people in the film. Just first of all, Diane Sawyer. She really did seem to defend the wife of the Maryland governor about her losing her virginity and cheating on Justin Timberlake, who the Maryland governor's wife had said, you know, I'd like to shoot her. It's frightening, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think back then, everybody treated Brittany like that. You know, it was, I mean, I think with Diane Sawyer, what she does say is, yeah, can you believe it? Brittany's, when she says a governor wants, the wife of a governor wants to shoot you, Brittany says, oh my gosh, that's horrible. And Diane says, because of you know, something like because of how hard it is to be a mother and the influence you have over children, which is so surprising. But what Brittany says is, I'm not there to babysit your kids.
Exactly.
That's a good response.
Brilliant. Fantastic. And also, obviously, Justin Timberlake. Now, Justin Timberlake has come out and apologized this week. And I know that you have said that you're quite happy with the fact that he also brought in the Janet Jackson 2004 Nipplegate scene. I don't think he should have brought that in at all. I think he should have taken the bull by the horns here and given a proper apology. And I thought his apology was appalling.
Well, you know, Janet Jackson, I think Justin's involvement with her and the way that they talked about it afterwards, like, ruined her career as well, like dismantled it. I mean, she wasn't allowed to go to the Grammys after that, and he went and won a Grammy. Like, why wasn't she allowed to go to the Grammys? So I am glad that he did both. I mean, I think it's symbolic. You know, he didn't say what he was sorry for specifically, but to me, you know, we feature this music video where there's a Britney lookalike and he's stalking her in it. And, you know, we have these radio shows and this kind of narrative that Justin's heartbroken and Britney is the slut who broke his heart. And I think about all the people that had to make that narrative happen, all the people involved in making a music video, the executives who put it on TV, you know, those people had arguably more power than Justin in this and are, you know, he's the face of it.
I mean, she was targeted in a specifically horrible way, wasn't she?
Yes. I mean, you know, what I came to understand, I think there's this idea that Britney was a puppet as a teenager and was sexualized without realizing it by puppet masters who were making her do it. And I thought that too, because that's what everyone was made to think. But really, in the reporting process and talking to all these people who were around her at the beginning of her career, independently, everybody kept saying, Britney's not a puppet. She was being herself. That teenagers have sexuality, teenagers have agency. This was Britney, and she was very involved in creating her image, very involved in what kind of music she made and what kind of music videos and tours, and a creative person. And you know, a lot of people argue that it's taking away her agency by imagining that she was sexualized by an outsider. And Kim Kaiman, who was her marketing executive at Jive Records when she was 15, who appears in the film, she said she thinks that that's one of the reasons Britney was so successful, because she really embodied this dichotomy of a teenage girl. Teenage girls have sexuality and they want to be sexy, but they're also kids and they're figuring it out. And she sees it as Britney kind of figuring that out in front of everybody. And the immediate response from adults, from kids, they loved it, because obviously something about that spoke to like the preteen, millions of preteens who bought her albums, but the adult generation who just immediately wanted to shame her for that. How could you do this?
She came out with some kind of an Instagram thing after this film came out first a couple of weeks ago. And it was something about, I love being on stage and it was great to be on stage 2 or 3 years ago. And I was like, sorry, what is that about? So I have to ask the question, Britney has posted. Is it Britney?
We don't know. You know, we don't know. I think the reason everyone's so attracted to solving the mysteries in her Instagram is because you can't, that's the only place we get to see her or hear her. And it's very unclear whether she is controlling it. You can see patterns in her posts, and that particular post was outside the pattern that normally happens, but it's hard. Like, we don't know what's in Brittany's head. So we don't know what she's trying to say with her Instagram, but it feels, I feel compelled to look at it because you can't interview her, you know?
Well, like, I mean, fans of anybody can do whatever fans of anybody want to do. And I'm not against people who have this thing. You have it at the beginning of the movie, in the end, and obviously outside every court case, they have a deep bond with Brittany and they grew up with her as well, particularly a lot of gay boys in their teens and a lot of teen girls as well. And it moved from leave her alone to free Brittany, etc. This obsession and celebrity intrigue, do you think the very same thing might be being stirred up by this kind of carry on?
I don't. I was surprised to know who Britney's fan base was. It was hard for me at first to try to relate to them because I'm not a big fan of anyone. So I was trying to figure out where they were coming from. Like, why are they so passionate about this person that they don't actually know, you know, face to face. And what I found is that so many of these fans outside the courthouse are LGBTQ, particularly gay men who were boys when she was coming up, and also a lot of outsider type of people who have been bullied, people who have dealt with mental health issues and been shamed for that and bullied for that. And I think, you know, she was sold to them as this friend, like the friend that's just like you. So she's the peer that they look up to. And then she gets bullied and treated this way. And so I think a lot of people really, really relate to that and really became even stronger fans when she went through this 2007, 2008 period, because they related to being bullied and they related to being shamed for sexuality or mental health reasons. And so they're very, very passionate about this because they're defending, you know, themselves as well as her.
Okay, well, just to finish up, a couple of questions. Like, obviously, to get back to something earlier, we don't know what we don't know. So therefore, that's just where we are. But you're pretty sure probably that Brittany did not get your request to appear in this?
You know, it's really hard to say because of the conservatorship. Part of one of the things in court documents we saw was that they can limit who interacts with her. So it's very, you know, we went through the regular routes of her publicist, her manager, Instagram, and then also people that we knew who were friends with her or friends of friends with her or connected to her family in some way. But it is unclear if she got them because we don't know if the messages are going to a phone she's directly seeing. Like, we just don't know.
Okay, well, the story that you originally wanted to tell, is that the story you ended up telling?
You know, originally, I work for the New York Times, and so we make things as a big team. It was a huge team effort. And Liz Day, who appears in the film, who's a senior editor at the New York Times, this was her idea. And she had actually been trying to pitch it for 2 years. The original concept was OJ Made in America. Have you?
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Yes. So like that, but for Britney Spears was her original pitch. So kind of going back and looking through the media coverage of Britney and through Britney's life, through the lens of 2020, and seeing, you know, how complicit we were in what happened to her. But as we were filming this conservatorship that had been so stagnant and tight for so long, all of a sudden these court documents start coming out where Britney's court-appointed attorney is indicating that she wants her father to be removed. She wants things changed. In one of the court documents, it said Britney welcomes the informed support of her many fans. Mm-hmm. So, and the whole, she doesn't want this to be locked away like a family secret. And so I know that is a reason that really emboldened the fans, because they finally got some confirmation of what they had suspected, that Britney wanted something to change in the conservatorship. And it also made it a little easier for us to film because we knew she had stated through her attorney that she didn't want this to be locked away like a family secret. So we're putting some of it out there.
Indeed. Well, listen, Samantha, thank you very much indeed for talking to us. The main character, as you said before in this film, is our culture. And I think the finger is being wagged at every single one of us. But the central mystery, do you think it's how could somebody make millions of dollars, headline Vegas, headline their own shows, make albums, but also qualify for the ultimate level of protection for being incapable of making decisions for your own best interest. What is the legal reasoning behind it? We don't know.
Yes, exactly. We don't know. But that is the mystery for sure.
All right. Well, then movie number two, we probably will. Thank you so much, Samantha, for talking to us on the program today.
Thank you.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.